Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Christina Schnuckel, Wealth Advisor and Director of Client Experience here at Ellen Becker Investment Group. Join us as we explore how true wealth comes from aligning your money, your health, and your story with what matters most. So my guest today is Ben Rivak from Provisor. Mm-hmm. And Ben, thank you so much for coming back to the show.
Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, I'm really excited to talk to you today about our topic. We're going to be talking a little bit about credit scores, consumer debt, mm-hmm. something that I think there's a lot of misinformation out
there.
So I'm really excited. I'm really excited to talk to you about it. I've got some statistics here that maybe will resonate with you, but it says Americans now carry a record $1.277 trillion in credit card debt.
Yes.
That's an astounding number. It's the highest ever tracked. So with debt rising this fast, knowing how credit scores and debt actually work is more important than ever.
Absolutely.
So you've been one of our longstanding business partners here. You're a senior loan advisor with Provisor to help make smarter, stronger moves with credit cards, debt. You do more than just get people mortgages,
yes.
which is why one of the reasons we love working with you is you have this educational background and you love to educate clients on what they can be doing better when it comes to credit scores, their mortgages, all of those things that really tie hand in hand with their financial plan.
There's no way to separate it out. You know, there's no way to like piecemeal it and say just a mortgage. It's like it all fits together.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's particularly with credit card debt. One of the things that I see is people will they'll almost underwrite themselves and decide they can't buy a house because they have credit card debt. And that's simply not true. It's a very holistic view. And there are times where it makes sense to pay off a credit card as part of a home purchase or leading up to get prepared. But the reality is there's a lot of situations where the right move isn't paying off a credit card in the mm-hmm. short term. Because when you look at building wealth, a lot of the wealth that comes from a home is through property appreciation. It's not through the short term paying down that debt. It's that the home becomes worth more over time.
Yeah.
And you need a place to live. So why not live in a place that's getting worth more and more as time goes on?
Yeah.
And so, you know, with like for a credit card, you might have a minimum payment of $50 on a credit card with $10,000. And if you really want to get into a house, you could take that $10,000 you've saved up and pay off your credit card. Or you could put it towards a down payment on a house. And now all of a sudden you're not paying rent anymore. You're building equity. And it's so specific to each person. I can't really say with like a blanket statement, it's the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
But don't discourage yourself. I guess that's the advice I give to anybody is don't take yourself out of the running to become a homeowner. Talk to an expert. Talk to someone who does it every day. Like I've been living and breathing this for 15, 16 years now.
Yeah.
And I've helped a lot of people who didn't think it was ever possible. And those closings, honestly, are the best ones to go to because
yeah.
they have tears in their eyes. They never thought it was first generation homeowners. It's an absolute honor to be able to help them achieve that goal.
Oh, that's exciting.
So, yeah.
So what I'm hearing is kind of that credit card debt by itself, it's not necessarily good or bad. It's, you know, you need to dive into the other situations
I wouldn't say
around.
It's good.
Okay. Well, say it's not necessarily bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think it's a place anyone ever wants to be. I'm sure they'd feel better if they didn't have it.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is I don't get to choose when I meet someone. And I always try to meet people where they're at in the present moment. And if they do have credit card debt, we'll find a way to work on their situation. And maybe it is they have to pay some of that down. Maybe it's not. There's no way to know. I would never encourage someone to not talk to me, though, because they don't feel they're in a position to buy a house if it's something they want to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
The very worst, we put a plan together to help them get there.
Well, you know, and that resonates with how we work with clients, too, because most clients that come into us, they either are in one of two situations. They come in and they're very proud to tell us that they have zero debt
yep.
and they don't carry credit card balances, or they're a little sheepish to tell us that they do have a credit card balance. And
yeah.
we often say the important thing is diving into their spending patterns and to understand where that credit card debt came from. Is it lifestyle creep?
Yeah.
That's an ongoing issue. More often than not, it's not having an emergency fund planned for.
Yep.
And it was one or two unexpected expenses that really added up. So there's things that can be worked on from a financial plan there, too.
Yeah.
So we often say just like it shouldn't necessarily take you out of the ruling for a mortgage, it definitely shouldn't take you out of the ruling for a financial plan.
No. And I think that what the work you and I do really goes hand in hand. And that's part of the reason I love working with you guys is you are such an educationally minded a group of advisors that I've never talked to a client who wasn't thrilled by their experience with you. And
we love to hear
that's not by accident, though. I mean, you truly have their best interest at heart when you talk to them. I talk to a lot of folks who need an advisor, and who do you think I refer them to? It's because I know that you guys you're going to look out for them. You're going to take care of them. It's not about you're not going to try to sell them an annuity and then see them in, 2 years to sell them another annuity. Yeah. It's a much different approach than what I've seen out there in the advisor market. So.
Well, and I think both of us take that approach in our businesses, that it's not transactional based. You know, it's what's in the client's best interest. And that's key. From a personal experience, my husband and I talked to you a couple months ago about, a property we were thinking of, and we kind of explained the situation. And I love what you told us. You said, you know what? I'm not going to be able to offer the most competitive product for that. Talk to this guy.
Yeah.
That was not with Improvisor, but, a banking friend of yours, and was able to point us in the right direction. I mean, that's huge when we talk about how to set clients up for success. We recognize, too, we can't be everything for every client. There's some clients we're not a fit for, but we're hoping to point them in the right direction.
Yeah, I've always looked at it as just an investment in the future of my own business. Like, if I was to do a loan for somebody and I know it's not the best product, and I know that they could get a much better deal at another, maybe like a brick and mortar bank just for their type of product. And I do the loan knowing that that's costing them thousands of dollars a year more than it needs to. I don't think I could sleep at night. And on top of it, even if you didn't take the morality and the ethical piece out of it, from a business perspective, if that person and their realtor finds out 6 months down the road that they could have gotten that deal somewhere else, and that you likely knew that they could have gotten that deal somewhere else, they're probably not going to refer you business anymore. Mm-hmm. So from doing the right thing, it's not the right thing. And from a business growth perspective, it doesn't make any sense. It's very short-sighted.
Yeah.
And so I think that it's really nice to work with people that think the same way. Mm-hmm. Like, it's very long-term. We're in this for the long haul. We're not a one and done shop. And we have a reputation. Like, you guys have an excellent reputation. We have an excellent reputation. Like, there's a reason for it.
For sure. Well, Ben, let's go to some basics.
Yeah.
So when we're talking about, getting into a home, one of the questions we get all the time is about credit scores. So take me to the building blocks of starting at, what is a credit score and what components add or detract from that credit score?
Sure. I'll start even at a more foundational level. Perfect. Than the score. So the score is a byproduct of the important stuff. So there's three credit reporting agencies: Experian, TransUnion, and Equifax. These are just three companies that collect all this information that gets reported to them. They do not go and seek out information about you as a consumer. It's only what's reported to them. And some things that people think gets reported that doesn't is you overdraw your checking account. That's not going to hurt your credit score. You can run your checking account negative and they can close it with a negative balance. It's not going to hurt your credit score. Things that do hurt your credit score are credit-based accounts like credit cards, loans of any type, student loans, car loans, mortgages, home equity loans. Loans like Get It Now Store, they'll offer like in-house financing. You can go buy a washer and pay $50 a month and have or a couch. That kind of short-term consumer financing, that's always credit-based. So that's going to report. So you miss a payment on that, it's going to hurt your score, even if the payment's $20 a month. And so these credit bureaus collect all of this data, and that data is what determines what your score is. The score itself isn't going to determine whether you get approved or denied for a loan. It's the data out there in the report that a lender uses to decide, is this individual a viable risk for us to make this loan or not? There's I'll kind of paraphrase a little bit about fair lending. There's a lot of regulation around this, but in a nutshell, lenders aren't allowed to say, we're going to give you one interest rate and you another interest rate because of a random feeling that we have about your ability to repay. It has to be based on something tangible. And that is where the score comes in. The score is what's used for pricing. And that's true for every kind of loan out there, whether it's a credit card. If you have a great credit score, you'll get a lower rate on your credit card. If you buy a car, you have a better credit score, you'll get a better deal on your car loan. Same for mortgages. And so the data that goes into those reports is what determines the score. The score itself, though, is just for pricing. I think I've closed 5 or 6 loans that are below 550 credit score, which is pretty bad. You got to almost work to get that low. But if you have a saving grace, like you have a cosigner who has great credit, you have a big down payment, maybe you have a ton of income, and the reason your score is low is from, you know, over a year ago, you can still get a mortgage to buy a house. There has to be a saving grace though, because in your report, if all of the big stuff is right, even the score is still low, it hasn't started to rise yet, but you fixed all the major stuff, or you have a saving grace like a cosign or big down payment, it can still work. And so that really the fundamental of score is what's going into that report. And the real important piece is, are you responsible with your money? How do you use debt? And discretionary debt is the primary piece of that, so credit cards. So when you have money available on a credit card and you choose not to use it, that's the absolute best case scenario.
Okay.
And so carrying credit card debt isn't a deal breaker, but it's a negative impact on your score, because the credit bureaus, they don't see how much money you make. They don't know how much you have in assets. You could have $1 million with Ellenbecker, and if you have one credit card and it's a limit of 10,000 and it's maxed out, your score is going to be tremendously hurt by that, because the bureaus only see what gets reported to them. And so they'll see, all right, you have $10,000 available. You're using all of it. You're paying the minimum. That's not good. So your score is going to drop, and dramatically drop. Like, revolving debt is probably, besides missing payments on loans, maxing out credit cards is the second quickest way to tank a credit score. When you think about how to build a strong credit score, when I used to work for a local credit union, we were very closely tied to some of the universities. The way that we would help students build credit is we would educate them about how this works. And we'd say, look, the best thing you can do is open up a student credit card and an overdraft protection line of credit. So you have two separate credit-based accounts, and don't use them. Mm-hmm. Just keep them out there. Every month now you have two on-time payments just by having those accounts open. You don't even have to use them, but by having them available and choosing not to use them, that's what builds a credit history, because now you have 24 on-time payments a year just by turning the lights on. It doesn't cost you a penny. And so if you can think through that and do it intelligently,
mm-hmm. and have some control around it,
self-control in college. It can go one of two ways, yeah. But you know what? I would rather learn with a $1,500 limit when I'm in college, because I can figure that out pretty easily once I start working full time.
Yeah.
If you wait and your first card is 10,000 or something after you're working full time, you can put yourself in a much bigger pickle.
You know, that's a really key thing, you know, touching on financial literacy and getting this information out there for those younger investors, the college kids graduating, getting their first time jobs. I did a show with one of our wealth advisors here, Heather Deaton, just talking about savings for kids. And we shared some of our own money mistakes early on. And one of the takeaways was, we want our kids to make those mistakes when they're small mistakes and they're easily fixable, versus the big mistakes, the $10,000 of credit cards.
You know, I probably opened, it's easily in the thousands. I've opened in thousands of checking accounts for college freshmen. The ones that were the most responsible were the ones that had a debit card when they were 12, 13 years old, because they figured it out when they were young, and their parents didn't make it a taboo. It was something that was just ingrained in them. Like, this is a tool for me to exist and participate in society, and I need to use it responsibly. You know, my oldest just turned 7 last week, and we're already thinking, we actually just opened up an account for him, because he's like, I don't want to have cash in my wallet. So it's never too soon to start.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back more with Ben right after the break.
Money Sense is brought to you by Ellenbecker Investment Group. If you're looking for a trusted partner or ready to elevate your financial plan, you're in the right place. With multiple Better Business Bureau Torch Awards for ethics and integrity, Ellenbecker combines expertise with a team member you can trust. Meet our advisors and explore financial resources at ellenbecker.com.
Welcome back to Money Sense. I'm Christina Schnuckel, Wealth Advisor and Director of Client Experience here at Ellenbecker. And today my guest is Ben Rivak from Provisor. Ben is a senior loan advisor with Provisor, friend of the Money Sense show you've been on before. Ben, thank you so much for talking with us today. We have been chatting about credit scores and what goes into there, and really talking about how important that can be when purchasing a house. from my perspective, even just saving for retirement and planning for having sustainable income in retirement and knowing what that number is for you. Mm-hmm. So thank you. I mean, we started by talking about the amount of consumer debt that's out there.
Yeah.
I need to read the statistic again because it's crazy. It 1.277 trillion in credit card debt. Let's talk a little bit. We've talked about the credit score and some of the components to it, but let's talk about good debt versus bad debt. And I'm interested in your opinions on this because in the wealth advisory world, oftentimes we have clients come into us and one of their number one goals is to pay off their mortgage.
Yep.
And let's say they took their mortgage out about 8 years ago or so, and they're at a 2% mortgage rate.
Yep.
And from our perspective, assuming that their portfolio and retirement can continue to easily cover that mortgage payment and then some, we often say that's not a bad debt to have.
Yeah.
But I want to hear your perspective on good debt versus bad debt and how that comes into this conversation around credit scores.
Yeah. No, I would agree. I think it's pretty easy to make the case if a rate is sub 3% that it's you'd be kind of silly to pay it off. I mean, what's the average return on a, I know you guys can't guarantee returns, but you can talk about averages. What's the average return on like the S&P 500?
I mean, about 10% a year.
A little better than two, right?
Yep.
So even today, I mean, we're in the mid sixes now. We're kind of in the middle of this Iran crisis thing. Its rates have gone up about half a point since it started, but we're still only at 6.5%.
Mm-hmm.
So I think.
Well, and historically, to kind of put that in perspective, which I was not, you know, alive when this was happening of the 18% mortgage rates,
yes,
you know, back in the 70s and the 80s. But my parents always like to remind me that that's where their first house was at.
Yes. Yep.
And I do think eventually we're going to look back and say 6%. That was a cheap rate for a 30 year fixed.
Yeah. My dad likes to remind me of that too. He's actually down visiting us right now, and he mentioned that before I came on the podcast. So
it's the badge of honor to have paid that.
I think it is. I think his first house was 14.5. So he was on the tail end of that as rates started coming down.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, hopefully we don't have to go back there as a country. That'd
I
be nice. Because
so.
that's a big number.
It is.
And it's hard to dig out from that. But as far as debt goes, if you have debt that's unsecured, unsecured just means there's no asset tied to it. So secured debt would be like if you did a loan against a house or a car, you're buying an asset. Unsecured debt is like a personal loan or a credit card. And the big difference is when you have an asset tied to it, it's usually because you use that debt to purchase that asset. If you have assets that decline in value like cars, you could make an argument that a car loan's not good debt because you're borrowing money to buy something that's going to become more and more worthless over time until eventually it's worth nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Buying a house, on the other hand, the real value in buying a house, besides paying off that debt over time and owning the house outright, homes tend to appreciate. They're not making land anymore. So if you look at the average property appreciation over time, that's where the money's made. And I was very fortunate. I bought my first duplex down by Miller Park when I was 19. I don't know how I got that loan. I actually ran into
How you got that loan either.
We wrote an offer about 2 months ago on a house, and the listing agent on it just happened to be the mortgage broker that helped me on my purchase. And I hadn't talked to her in like 14 years. It was the coolest thing ever. Like I got to see her again at closing, gave her a big hug.
Mm-hmm.
She found a way to get that loan done for me. And knowing what I know now, she is a miracle worker. Like, I didn't realize at the time, but knowing what I know now, like, I gave her the biggest hug because my house is paid off now, that duplex. I still have a mortgage on my primary, but, you know, being able to own an asset like that and over 15 years have it paid off by mostly by tenants, it's something that you can't do without taking on debt in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I could never go and bought that house with cash. I was 19. If you can look at debt as a tool and apply it correctly in the right situation, it can be a really good thing. If debt is there as a carryover because your spending doesn't match up with your income, that's when it becomes an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's dangerous to gloss over with like a broad stroke of the brush that all debt is bad, because it's not. Debt can be very useful, and it can be a great way to leverage your income to build your wealth faster.
Mm-hmm.
But
you have to be disciplined with it.
Very disciplined, mm-hmm. and smart about how you take on debt.
And that's hard. That's hard for many people. And we often have lots of conversations around here about that lifestyle creep.
You know, and that's one of the things I love about working with Ellen Becker is you'll tell the kind truth when it's not always the thing that somebody wants to hear, but it's the thing they need to hear. Mm-hmm. And that's the same approach we take. We're never rude to people, but we're also not going to lie to them or mislead them. Like, if you want to buy a house, I'm not going to pretend like you're on the right track when you're not. If we talked 6 months ago and you come back 6 months later and you're heading in the wrong direction, I'm going to tell you. And it's not to be rude. It's because I'm going to be honest with you about what you're doing and what you're doing wrong and what you need to do different. And it's okay if you don't listen. Like, mm-hmm. it's not up to me, but we're going to share the truth with you.
Right.
And then it's up to you what you want to do with it.
Absolutely. So. Okay. Well, Ben, tell me about how should potential home buyers get prepared to buy a house? And one of the things that you yes. mentioned that kind of stuck out with me, you called your first mortgage broker a miracle worker.
Yes.
And I love hearing that, because what I'm starting to pick up on, you know, from conversations we had about our own personal situation, not all mortgage providers are the same.
Not even
close. And there's some that have more flexibility than others yeah. or are able to think outside the box. And that yep. can be really, that can make the difference for a client who maybe has a unique situation or yep. has a little bit less to work with, but is in a situation where they potentially could carry a higher loan balance or whatnot.
There's so many variables that go into buying a house. I think the number one thing that I would give to anyone who's interested in buying a house is do not make any financial changes without talking to a loan officer first. If you have a credit card that has $10,000 on it, let's say you're a first-time buyer. If your income is over a certain limit, you may not qualify for any sort of down payment assistance. You only need, though, 3% for conventional or 3.5% for FHA. That's your minimum down payment. That can be your money. It can be a gift from family. It can be a down payment assistance program. But if you don't have family to gift you money and you don't have down payment assistance because you make too much, you have to bring that minimum required contribution to closing. So 3% or 3.5%. If you have a credit card with 10 grand on it, what's your minimum payment? Maybe 150 bucks a month, 100 bucks a month, 50 bucks a month if they're really milking you for interest. Like, so you can save 50 bucks a month on payment right now from a cash flow basis, or you can buy a house. You spend that money on paying off your credit card, you got to save up another 10 grand to be able to buy that house. And so I'm not saying that you should necessarily buy a house rather than pay off your credit card debt, but once you pay it off, you can't turn around and unpay it off. Mm-hmm. So it's in your best interest to understand what those options look like before you make a big financial decision, like taking all your cash and paying off debt.
Yeah. I think seeking that advice is key.
Yeah.
I can't tell you the number of times that we've had new clients come into us and yeah. talk with us. And after going through the financial planning process, they say things like, I wish I hadn't made this decision 2 weeks before meeting with
yeah.
And it was something that they had the best of intentions of what they did and when they did it, but it was almost like making the decision in a silo, or, you know, with blinders on, that they were looking at one factor, they weren't looking at the holistic picture. And oftentimes in our world, what it means is they've taken away any ability to control their taxes going forward.
Yeah.
And that's a hard pill to swallow when you're talking about, you know, a 30, 40 year retirement of potentially higher taxes. Or kind of locking themselves into that. So, you know, I think it's so important anytime you're talking about finance to seek the counsel of the expert.
Yeah.
You know, which is where we bring you in. I am not a mortgage expert.
And nor am I an advisor.
Right. So you have to bring the right partners to the table that are able to help clients make those decisions. You know, I'm sure everyone's heard the analogy of, I'm not going to do my own surgery.
Yep.
You know, WebMD is great, but that's dangerous.
Yeah.
So there's only so much information out there. And it's important for clients to know who they can go to and who they can trust, which is why we work with so many different partners in different areas that we have thoroughly vetted and worked with ourselves, because yep. I want to make sure when I'm recommending clients talk to you about mortgage that I've got data to back that up of why you're a great fit and a great partner for them.
Yeah, there's an old adage that any doctor that diagnoses himself has a fool for a patient. And, you know, I take that to heart, though. I even for myself, if I'm looking at doing something financially, it's never made in a vacuum. I will source as much knowledge and advice from people smarter than I am before I make a decision, because it's easy, I think, when it's your own personal situation to kind of get. Your judgment gets clouded in a way. I don't know what it is, but when I'm talking to borrowers or realtors and trying to give them the best advice and explain their options, it's always in my mind, like I ask so many questions to really understand that it's really crystal clear how I'm going to explain their options to them. Like if it's not, I need to ask more questions. For some reason, when it's yourself, it's a little harder to get to that level of clarity without talking to someone else. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know that you guys take the same approach. Like I'll have people call me, I'll have realtors call me with questions about a deal that I'm not even doing the loan on. And I'll help them all day long. Like my goal is to just help people. Like that's it. And I believe it always comes back to you. So if it's not a loan I'm working on, that's okay. You can still call me and ask. Mm-hmm. If you're not even sure if you can get a loan, that's okay. Call me and ask. If it's something that I'm not the best fit for, I'll be the first to tell you. Just call and ask. Like
you told us. That was great.
Yeah, it is. It's funny. Like I don't get paid by talking myself out of business, but you know, it's I just want to do the right thing. And yeah. I think that pays dividends. And it sure makes waking up in the morning and looking at yourself in the mirror a mm-hmm. lot easier to do when yeah. you know that you're doing the right thing by anybody who comes your way.
Well, and having that educational focus is so key because in an absence of having someone to go to who's an expert in the field, people do research themselves. And yep. with the world of AI and TikTok, the amount of times we get asked about, hey, I saw this on TikTok. It's no, you can't really
Chat
do that.
Chat told me that.
Yeah. Yep. And those tools have a place. There's some really good things about them too, but they're not always accurate. So it's, yeah. you need to verify and talking to someone who's going to take the educational and the collaborative approach to solving a problem and yep. giving you solutions and options, I think is wonderful.
And I love when people bring the questions that they found, you know, they heard something online or they saw it on TikTok or they Instagram or they read it on Chat because they asked a question. Like, that's great. Like I'm glad that you're seeking out advice and answers. Like bring that, ask me about it and I'll point you to the source. Like, If you're curious why I'm saying something, like I'll show you why that is. I'll explain it in a way that makes sense. And the reality is there's not enough information out there in the mortgage realm, and I'm sure in the investment advisory realm, for a system like ChatGPT to give accurate advice, because it simply can't know what it doesn't know. And in my world, it's a lot about structuring, like mm-hmm. how loans are structured, how different things fit into the bigger picture. Chat will give you what it thinks is the right answer. And it's just, it can't know that it's wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no disclaimers, no. disclosures.
No. Chat's great.
Yeah.
But it's not going to get you a mortgage and it's not going to figure out your, you know, retirement plan holistically.
Yeah.
So it has its place though.
Well, before we move on, anything else that you think that investors or potential home buyers should be aware of when they're thinking about buying a house? So you said, you know, prepare best by talking to specialists.
Yeah.
Anything else that's kind of top of your list that they should be thinking of?
I guess just to reiterate that there is no too soon. I mean, I talk to folks who are like, they're in college and they want to get ready to buy in 2 years or 3 years. And that's great. Like, I love that you're thinking that far out. Mm-hmm. And I will absolutely, it probably doesn't make sense for me to pull your credit at that point. Yeah. But I can still give you really good advice and help you get prepared. And we'll make a little checklist so you have it written down, because in 2 years, you're not going to remember the conversation.
Yeah.
So just don't be afraid to have the conversation. It's yeah. really easy to do. And that's hands down the best place to start.
Wonderful. I love hearing that pathway to success even earlier on. Yep. That's great. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back more with Ben on Money Sense.
Want to keep building wealth that aligns with your values? New episodes of Money Sense drop weekly. Subscribe now and continue learning how your money, your choices, and your life can work together.
Welcome back to Money Sense. I'm Christina Schnuckel, Wealth Advisor and Director of Client Experience here at Ellenbecker Investment Group. My guest today has been Ben Rivak from Provisor. Ben, you've been on the show before. I love having you on the show. You're so easy to talk to and you share so much knowledge around a topic that is really difficult to understand, I think, for a lot of individuals, but it has such a big impact on financial well-being and buying a home, maintaining, you know, a good credit score that's going to impact you for yeah. your life. So this is such a great topic. One of the things I wanted to touch on, you know, we've talked about credit scores, we've talked about the credit bureaus, good and bad debt. But before we wrap up today, I wanted to talk a little bit about mortgage rates. And, you know, one of the things that we get asked a lot in our line of business is, we'll call it market timing. Okay. Yes. Of, you know, like, oh, is now a good time to invest, yep. you know, but I'm worried about the market going down further or whatnot. And we often say, if it's a long-term investment, now's the time. Get the money working for you. But I'm curious about how that pertains to mortgage rates and how you see that. Yeah. Should clients be waiting and hoping that those mortgage rates are going down? Should they be locking in today? What are you seeing?
Well, it kind of depends. I also get asked all the time, should we wait to lock? Should we wait to buy? Should we? If I knew where rates were going, I would be on my island right now in the Caribbean.
Correct.
And I wouldn't be on the podcast.
You and me both. If we had our crystal balls, it would make our job so much easier.
It would be so easy. So the reality is nobody knows where rates are going to go. You can have a tweet go out and all of a sudden mortgage rates drop by a quarter point in a day. Did I know that tweet was going to go out?
Nope.
No, nobody did. And nobody knew that rates were going to react the way they did. Even if they knew that tweet, it could have gone the other way. You just don't know. And so what I always come back to is if you own a home, you have a mortgage and rates go down, you can refinance your loan to that new lower rate. If you wait to buy and rates go down, more buyers now qualify. So supply and demand, home prices are going to be driven higher because there's more people trying to buy the same house. So waiting and hoping rates go down, are you going to save money by waiting? I don't think so. And if you look back historically, no, you're not going to. If you're trying to wait for home prices to come down, I mean, good luck. They're not making land anymore. So maybe you'll get lucky and time the market, but you know, the dollar cost averaging, like time in the market is always going to be timing the market. And I think the same is true when you look at owning a home. You need a place to live. If you don't own right now, you're paying rent. Mm-hmm. And not everybody should own, but if somebody wants to own a home and they think it's the right thing for them, waiting is usually not a viable solution. It's definitely not going to help you in any way. And so it's very situation dependent. I'd encourage anybody who's curious just to reach out and have a conversation, and we can talk through their unique situation. But in general, there's really not a benefit to waiting. One of the products that we offer that is truly, I think it really sets us apart, is we do offer a free refinance for anyone that uses us for their purchase. And the way that we truly make it free is my compensation is about half of what it is on a refinance as it is on a purchase. The difference goes back to pay those closing costs. Mm. A lot of lenders say free refi and then they just mark the rate up to pay the closing costs, which yeah. it's a little disingenuous if mm-hmm. you ask me.
But a little misleading.
A little misleading. So the question I always say is, if you want to know if it's truly free, say, is the rate different on the free refi versus the non-free refi? And that'll tell you, you know, if they're honest with you, that'll tell you the truth. But, you know, so getting into a house and trying to time such a big decision, like that's not, we didn't even talk about finding the right house.
Yeah.
Like, so you're going to time the market and then just miraculously find the right house at the right time and get the accepted offer in this competitive market. We've been in a seller's market since 2019.
It's been, from what we hear from clients, you know, it's tough. Houses are still going above asking rate. There's multiple offers. You got to move quickly.
I don't think it's going to change either. You look at Milwaukee. Milwaukee is such a, I mean, we're such a manufacturing heavy area. Like, it's not like we're not Austin, Texas, where it's all tech mm-hmm. and tech, the tech bubble. I mean, that's a thing. Like, Milwaukee makes stuff and people work. We have a lot of blue collar jobs. And I don't think that that's going to change anytime soon. Like, Wisconsin is a very attractive place for businesses. And we're still increasing here in Milwaukee, mm-hmm. Milwaukee Metro. So, yeah.
Well, Ben, I can't thank you enough for coming on today and sharing your expertise to a subject that for many is like a black hole that, you know, we just don't always understand all the ins and outs. And the fact that you make yourself available from an educational standpoint to potential home buyers, I think is huge. So thank you so much for coming on today. Thank you for sharing. And thank you for joining us on Money Sense. We hope today's conversation made a meaningful difference in your personal and financial well-being. At Allen Becker Investment Group, before we plan, before we advise, before we invest, we always listen. Have a great week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Money Sense, brought to you by Allen Becker Investment Group. If you found today's conversation helpful, we encourage you to share it with a friend or family member, and be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts so you never miss an episode. At Ellen Becker Investment Group, we believe that education is the foundation of confident financial decisions. That's why we're proud to bring you insights from experienced professionals to help you build true wealth beyond just money. Please note, this podcast is intended for general informational purposes only and does not constitute personalized financial advice. Before making any financial decisions, we recommend consulting with a qualified advisor who understands your unique situation. For more resources, visit ellenbecker.com. We'll be back soon with more insights to help you live with clarity and confidence.